Good day, all. Welcome to the Powerhouse Perspective, empowering leaders for business breakthroughs. I'm Scott Medeiros, the president of HelmWise. This is Chandler Rose, the CEO of the Rosewood Family of Companies. And Chandler and I have been gone for the past week, and we caught up briefly yesterday. And the first thing we started talking about was the people that we met, and really first impressions and the experience of the individuals that we came in contact with, which quickly reminded me of something I learned over 40 years ago, and that were the leadership traits of a Marine Corps officer. And so I want to talk today about the traits that a leader needs to be aware of, because every time they come in contact with someone, these things will come to the forefront. It will create perception, it will create confidence, it will create doubt in the mind of the person you interact with. So Chandler, kind of an impromptu thing, we haven't really coordinated this particular discussion, which is the case in most of our discussions. So we'll talk in real time about leadership, leadership traits, first impressions, and those sort of things. The Marine Corps leadership traits, there are 14 of them. The way we the way that we memorized them back in officer candidate school was through an acrostic or an acronym called Buckle Did Tie JJ. It's 14 letters, and it goes from bearing all the way down to justice and judgment at the end. So I thought we'd take a two, three, maybe a handful of these and just talk about our experiences with those, whether or not they are a good leadership trait, things that you've seen, and perhaps things we should be aware of as leaders going forward.
Yeah, I think set the stage, what comes to mind that I've seen a lot of people, well, a couple of things, but certainly we talk often about perception. And so perception,
yes,
like culture, like a lot of the other things in life, that's being created whether or not you're active in it or not. And so you choose to train yourself on these attributes, conduct yourself in that way, in the instance of how someone else is perceiving you that you're not aware of, you're not prepared for, and it's just hard to predict it. And so you have to think about their perception is going to be how they judge you. Whether it's right or wrong, we can complain about it all we want to. It's the reality,
yes,
of
yes,
how business and how leadership works. So kick us off with which one was most impactful out of the 14 leadership traits.
Well, the one that comes to mind most frequently for me, and it's the first of the Buckle Did Tie JJ, the B, which is bearing. Bearing presence. How do you present yourself to the person that you're meeting for the first time? The old adage, you never have a second chance to make a first impression. And bearing really came to play in the people that I met at the conference down in Orlando where I was last week. Because how they walked up to you, their, whether they were smiling, whether they were, you know, have a scowl on their face, whether or not they were dressed nicely, you're getting that first impression even as you're approaching one another. And then from there, you know, do they offer their hand? Some people come in quickly for a hug, right? It's just one of those environments. And it reminded me, going back to officer candidate school back in 1984, so over 40 years ago, how important it is to present yourself in a confident image. And I think we as leaders don't realize that even walking down the hallway, we are being seen. We are setting a first impression, perhaps for a brand new employee, perhaps for a visitor who was visiting our facilities that day. How are you carrying yourself? Are you all slunched over and, you know, kind of, you know, just presenting a lack of motivation, a lack of energy? Or are you walking with your shoulders back and your chin up and with confidence you're walking down the hallway? Again, it's not everything, but it is the first thing people see. And as much as we would like to say that a person needs to get to know me, they're making that judgment or getting that perception just visually from your bearing.
Well, and the assumption that they need to get to know you doesn't take into account their ability to actually do that. Mm. So if you think the event you were at, well, it was 4,000 people there.
Correct.
You probably knew 20.
If that.
And so the whole idea that is kind of fantastical and a fairy tale, and I would say immature, is everyone's going to take the time to get to know you and learn more about you and the real you. Well, even if they wanted to do that, how many people would you have met in a week in Orlando?
Probably maybe 50 in
so
reality.
The reality is it's just not going to happen. And that's different, obviously, than friend groups or class or time where you actually get more intimate, you know, sustained time, fellow workers, things like that. But that first impression still impacts that relationship, and then out in public or out leading or leading in front of groups you don't know, certainly they are automatically taking a tally and making an appraisal of you and your ability to lead. So I think bearing is important. Bearing, I read a little different. Obviously, you're trained on the Marine Corps definition, so mm-hmm. you have the actual definition, but...
Or their definition.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's the their only.
Well, it's their list, so I'll give them their definition. Okay. But, you know, the thing that comes to mind for me, and it's a fairly recent ongoing discussion I'm having with some people training leadership and character, is to me, bearing can be the caricature of a leader. And so I want to be careful that we get leaders who put on this list that you're going to walk through.
Yes.
And they think that they're a leader.
Right. Good point.
And one of our key concepts at HelmWise is state of the captain. And bearing, the very first thing is state of the captain.
That's correct.
So how are you as a person prepared to lead? Not putting on, this is not acting.
Yeah, it's not fake it until you can make it sort of scenario.
So it is a,
yes.
A little bit of a contradiction, because we tell you that perception is obviously a big part of being the leader. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, have you taken a self-assessment of getting your bearing straight? Are you a leader? Are you confident? Is this show? Because to be honest, there are times, you know, I think it is naive to think there aren't times that you are somewhat faking it till you make it. Mm-hmm. That definitely happens. But as a leader, you know, could you actually prepare yourself and have true confidence and more depth, which are further down the line of your
correct
traits that are needed? Or is the reality is you're, in this case, troops are under fire. You don't really know what is going on. But the last thing you want to do is sow doubt and fear into the, you know, troops you're leading. And so there are times, of course, where you will fake it. But I just want to be clear that a lot of what is being trained, a lot of what is being talked about in programs I'm seeing right now that are around me directly are putting on the facade of being a leader.
Yes.
And so how did that play out as you...
Actually, it's a great point. It's a great point. And I'm so happy you brought it up that way, because you're right. You know, though we are trained, going back to officer candidate school, to have bearing, you've got to have all the other fundamentals, right? So that it's got to be bottled up, and your bearing is the packaging that goes around that. But without the ingredients inside the bottle, then you're just going to be a hollow shell, and that's not what you want. And that was the case too, right? So as a person approached, let's say that, you know, they were put together well, or maybe they weren't. And so you're forming that first impression, and then the next piece of it, the interaction, started getting into whether or not they were showing a facade. I had people who were very well put together walk up, and in just the first couple of sentences, you quickly found out that it was all about them, mm-hmm. right? So it was almost a look at me scenario, which comes to one of the second traits, which is unselfishness. You know, we talk about it inside of State of the Captain, between humility and stewardship, right? And sacrifice, another three of our core four. And the question is, what are they initially talking about? If they go into what they're doing and what they're interested in, and they're not asking questions about you first, trying to establish a connection, then to me, the facade suddenly becomes, it's all about them. It's image, and it's not substance. And so, yes, the other pieces come in through the conversation. So I did form a first impression of a person coming up. And whether or not that held true, whether or not it gained further respect and further interest in them as a person, really was depending upon what they started talking about shortly thereafter.
Yeah, and you see that as you go down the list of the Marine Corps. If you look at courage, knowledge, mm-hmm. Certainly dependability might not get that quickly, but I do think that they're not... I hope that you aren't forming a lot of dependability when they're all about showing you how good they are, because mm-hmm. in my experience, that's a warning sign more than it is a positive attribute, is they want to tell you how great they are. Obviously, they're overcoming something they're insecure about.
Yes.
But enthusiasm, I think, is one that certainly I'm a pretty flat affect guy, but enthusiasm, I think, not just in your emotions and mannerisms, but your pace and, you know, are you... You can contemplate, move through deep subjects, talk, even in a quick interaction, but if you're fluid and you're fluent and you're moving at pace, to me, that shows some knowledge, some depth, Also, some courage and ability to be unselfish is to ask Scott, what do you think? And here's areas maybe I'm trying to figure out more.
Yes.
How do you build that rapport, I guess, when you move past the first impression?
Well, when you talked about enthusiasm, it led me to the conversation we had yesterday, right? You were talking about some of your interactions. You're in the Dominican Republic and interactions with some of the service staff there. And we also talked about it in previous podcasts about how you made the transition with ProVantage, your very first company, and changing the perception and the opinion of Lowe's with your first customer with the people. They were walking with a sense of purpose, enthusiasm, right? And so that part is important to me as well. Does the person come with energy, right? Do they feel that they are excited about the conversation? Or is it a situation where, all right, here's a person, it's me and him in this room, so I have to go over and talk to him. You know, you can get that feeling from it. But if they come over enthusiastically, I mentioned earlier, people come up and they hug you. You're like, whoa, these people are happy to be here. And it kind of just changes the whole dynamic. And you know better than I about the chemicals of the brain and oxytocin and serotonin and some of those things and how that does that. And I think you have to have that sense of energy, that sense of purpose. And I think you can pick that up through your mannerisms. So enthusiasm to me is always important, because with enthusiasm, at least you know that they're alive. And more importantly, through that energy, you can probably take it and actually motivate one another. Because if you're bringing all the energy into the equation, that can get exhausting pretty quick. But if the person's there to share energy with you, now you can multiply it instead of having the addition effect. And so, yeah, energy, enthusiasm, pace, sense of urgency, all of those things come and play through in those early interactions.
And, tact is on the list.
Yes.
Tact falls right into that, not a term.
Well, I got that one wrong quite a few times.
Not a term used that often anymore. Everyone thinks that you should, again, not just accept them for who they are, know more about them, that you're not being sensitive if you don't take into account how they feel.
Correct.
As opposed to tact, which to me is, how do you handle
the
situation? Read the room, read the other individual, and to your point, either rise or fall or pick up pace and kind of move your emotion and pace alongside the person that you're with. There's a limit to that, because there is tact that's kind of more of, to me, being tactful as far as almost class and a level of expectation. If they fall below that, I don't think you have an obligation to match them, to be frank. I think they have an obligation to read the situation they're in, come with a certain level of preparedness and professionalism. And
right.
Again, this is not out of being cold, no different than I talked about wanting to get to know everyone. Some of it is expediency, the reality of life. If you don't want to come prepared to participate and lead and be part of the group, then it's really hard for the group to take a moment to bring you into the speed.
Yes.
And it's just not leadership at that point. You probably don't belong in that conversation or that situation, or maybe you have something going on outside that's, out of your control, but, maybe you need to take some time out of it. So how does that play out in tact? Obviously, the Marine Corps has a much more strict level of tact, but certain business
sure.
is a little different.
Well, and I mentioned in your little intro to that particular trait that I got it wrong quite a few times, and I did. Tact in terms of the Marine Corps is all about how do you act in any particular situation. Sometimes it requires energy and being very direct and very decisive. Other times it requires you to be listening instead of directing and understanding. And tact to me really goes to the old adage, it's not what you say, it's how you say it, the tone and the mannerisms of your speech often, your facial expressions, those are all things that come into this word tact. And there were many times, especially early on in my transition from the military career into the commercial or civilian career, was I started treating my fellow employees like Marines. And even worse, I was treating them like Lance Corporals and not as officers. And, and I would be very direct, and I would be almost angry in some of my interactions, especially if I felt the pressure of a deliverable. And I didn't use very much tact. And the tact certainly wasn't the right level for that particular audience. There was a session that we had with the executive program leaders down at the conference I was at, and they talked in how important it was when you're delivering any sort of period of instruction or any speech, any keynote, where it's the messenger, right? All the things that we're talking about, the impression of the speaker. And then there's the message, your content you're delivering. But more importantly, you've got to match the messenger, the message with the audience. And who are you speaking to? How should you address them? How are they going to learn? But if you don't take into consideration the audience, then the message will fall flat. Or you as the messenger may not resonate with them. And so you got to consider all three. And tact is the way in which you do that. You're like, what is the appropriate manner to address this audience? How should I use my voice, my emotions in this particular situation to move things forward? Is this something's gone wrong and you've got to be seen as someone who has it all under control? Or is it a learning situation? Or is it a sense of urgency? Go back to the military and bullets are flying and you don't have time. You've got to grab that person by the stack and swivel by the back of the shirt and toss them into their foxhole, right? Because it requires that. Someone say, well, that's not very good tact. Well, it's going to save their life. And so as a leader, we have to quickly analyze all of this information. And the thing is, often we may not get it right, but that doesn't say you can't then go back and say, look, I acted inappropriately at that time. This is what happened. Show a little humility. And so tact is something you should keep the front of mind, but if you get it wrong, go back to some of the others like humility and make it right.
Well, I think, you know, tact, the whole scenario you just described, requires humility. So you meet plenty of people who think, I'm who I am, I've made it, I've earned it. You get the benefit of coming to hear me speak, mm-hmm. or, you know, talking to me or getting my advice or my thoughts. That's zero tact. That's 100%, in my opinion, selfish and not caring about the other person. Mm-hmm. And so it violates a lot of these leadership traits that you have on here. So tact is, you know, it's preparation. So you have to take the time to actually and care.
Yes.
To appraise the situation, yes. and the people that are in there. You have to have enough respect for the people in the room. And, you know, again, there's several of these hit values that kind of went down through here. But, you know, tact manifests from good values. You have on here unselfishness. You know, courage is an attribute more, I would think, than a value. But dependability, you know, integrity, judgment. Values are required. What do you judge based against?
Correct.
That's really more what that one is, because a lot of people like to judge, and the problem is, what are they judging against? And then justice, which is...
That's one of our favorites.
Yeah.
Justice versus mercy
is a tough one. But again, on some of the programs I've been around lately, they want to discount the amount of time spent on virtues and values. Mm. And again, so to me, why would I want to train someone to be a leader and parrot character if I haven't had a discussion about their fundamental values and virtues, yep. that are core to them as individuals? Because the last thing I'd want to do is train up someone on how to pretend to be a leader, to lead a group of individuals in their careers, especially even in the military, when that person doesn't have their best interest at all at heart, and deep down they're not virtuous people. And so if we're not going to spend time on virtues and sort of vet the leaders that we're going to send out into the world or into your organization or into the military, I think you run a risk of training up, you know, folks that have no business learning to lead. And we've seen how that's played out in world stages. We've seen how it's played out in cults and religions. And, you know, being a very effective leader and having character and being able to motivate people does not equate to having an examination of their virtues and their values. So one of the things that Scott, when he came here at first, I kept telling him when he was running one of our businesses is, do they care?
Yes.
Do they care? And, you know, yep. it's like, oh, well, if they should have done, they did this,
exactly
this,
right.
they hit a checklist and say, no. Do they actually care? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of this will change tact. If I cared about the person I would care about, or the individual or the group, whoever it is you're speaking to, you would take the time to be tactful of the person. If you don't care about the person and you just care about, and there are times Scott brought up that where you know, speed and the risk are mm-hmm. so high, you don't have time to care that much. But hey, we'll come back to that.
Well, actually, it's done out of caring.
Well, it's definitely out of caring.
Yeah.
But you know, do you care? So what do you think on virtues and values and where they play into? Certainly, like I said, several of these are, I would consider a virtue or a value.
But yes.
How do you test that?
It's a great point, and this is why I love these conversations, because this just came up. Because as you mentioned values, and we talked about traits, and we all understand through these series of podcasts over the last, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18 podcasts that we've done, we've talked a lot about values. But how do you get to know or learn someone's values? Right? It isn't as if you sit down with a person you first meet and you're like, all right, let's just talk about our values first. Before we go any further, let's talk about our values. To me, it gets permeated or it gets infused into the traits that you're emulating, right? And I think in a very short period of time, from how they carry themselves to their interactions, you start to see what their value system is, right? As you mentioned, is it a caring? As someone who comes up and is asking you about yourself, right? How are you doing today? What do you enjoy doing? You know, trying to establish a connection, they're doing it out of caring. They want to add value to you. So, but if it's all about them, let me see what I can sell you. Let me give you my elevator pitch. Then, no, they don't care about it. They want a transaction. They don't want a relationship. Mm-hmm. And so to me, you get your early indicators of a person's value system through this initial engagement, through some of these traits. And then I think as the conversation goes on, you are probably using both your intuition and your intellect to determine, all right, is this person, like you said, a facade, or this is something they truly believe? But in a short period of time, especially as you continue to understand that person, connect with that person, learn more about that person, you've got to then decide, are we aligned values-wise or not? And if you're not, you can spend a lot of time in debate, but given the fact that time is something we can never buy more of or get back, I would say you quickly should start finding more people you're aligned with values-wise. So I think it comes initially through the traits and how you present, and the conversation and connection drives you deeper into what their true value system is.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, there's many reasons we continue to harp on it, but I do think even the values alignment has little to do with what people now believe is that they believe the same thing you do.
Correct, yes.
And so there's lots of times you can have shared values and have different opinions or diametrically opposed opinions mm-hmm. on occasion. But I think that when you meet those people and you realize they have a good heart and they have a good intent, and even if you're fully in disagreement, even vehemently disagreeing with them, you're not questioning their underlying motive and what they're trying to do. You might be questioning the wisdom of their outcome or mm-hmm. there is something there. And then even when you fully disagree, you had a lot of military examples of countries that went to war that had a huge amount of respect for each other. They're killing each other, literally. And mm-hmm. they have respect for one another, even though they're that much opposed, because they stood on their value system, their right. belief system. They fought with what we called honor and respect. And, you know, and even if that was brutal, it was consistent with yeah. how they, you know, really brought themselves to the battle. You know, I remember my grandfather, World War II veteran, had some not nice things to say about several of the countries he went through. And then some countries that he thought were amazing fighters, even though he was a prisoner of war, the Germans' ability to fight and discipline and resilience. You know, I don't know what you call it, respect, I guess you'd call it, honor of the how hard they fought. But, you know, he marched as a prisoner of war through the death camps with the Germans. So right. it was not anything out of love or admiration, I guess, but it is some respect of how they fought. And he had the same opinion of a lot of the Japanese soldiers as well. So,
you mentioned obviously values, having that sense of pride, that sense of respect. And the conference I was at last week was an international conference, and I met several of our Canadian colleagues there. And, you know, we often don't talk about politics on this podcast, but I think we all understand that there's a little bit of tension between the United States and Canada right now. And it was very, very interesting that the conversations quickly turned to the situation between our two countries. And so here we are at a leadership conference, right? And you still have some of that visceral reaction around nationality and how we treat one another and respect. And I found myself in a very unusual position as instead of taking a side, you know, and being a very proud American and having them be a very proud Canadian and kind of, you know, battle it out, I just said, what do we agree on? Mm-hmm. Right? What are we trying to do here? Do we agree that we should have a very reciprocal relationship with one another and that we should respect each other and we should support each other? And it took some time to get to the middle, to get to the common ground. We've talked about that on this podcast before, how important that is. Because I think if you can agree on the common ground, then you're starting to find those fundamental values. Even though on the fringes you disagree and you may have different opinions, as you mentioned earlier, there are things that you can agree on, right? Even if it's we agree to disagree, but you respect each other's position. And so that was a very real-time experience that I had that forced me to say, stop, let's not take up sides, let's get to the middle. And as a leader, you've got to be able to see both sides, right? You may know right in the early beginning of a conversation what your decision is, but you still must show the patience to listen and to understand the other side or the other options, because there may be a better one, right? It may not be the right question at the right time, at the right depth in that particular situation. And the information you get informed with actually allows you to make a better decision. And so that's kind of how I place these things in. And it's through that common ground that I determine whether or not the values are aligned close enough for us to continue forward in partnership, or whether or not this is just going to be, I'm going to respect you, I'm going to treat you well, I'm going to care for you, but we're probably not going to do a lot of things together.
Well, emotion is certainly one as the leader you must take into account. Yeah. Yours, and then obviously the people you're trying to lead or the relationship you're moving into. And so, you know, an emotion, giving it time to blow off a little bit, but then to your point, which is to me kind of a more technical definition of bearing, which the first I had a mm-hmm. list of words I want to throw out to you. But
yeah.
You kind of set up what do we agree? Let's pick something that we can kind of rally around, then we can still talk out these same points.
Correct.
But we're starting from a position that we're yeah. all in agreement on. And so I think, you know, in that sense, kind of a physical bearing, which is a direction, at least allowed the conversation to move off from pure emotion to, all right, let's pick an actual direction. And so I'll give you a list of impactful
sure.
words. And so first one I had was disoriented. And so, you know, you hit on this, it was your favorite, which is bearing.
Yes.
But disoriented as a leader, you know, for me, that is literally, do you have a direction for your group you're leading, for your business, for your family, for whatever the situation requires?
Yeah, we've talked about this in previous podcasts. We talked about the North Star. We've got, you know, we call that's our North Star, Polaris, and then you've got, we call it our business kind of why and serious. We're going to use the constellations going back to our C metaphor. But you're right. I think to lead anything, you must understand where you're leading to, mm-hmm. right? And you can't just be wandering through the gray. You've got to have at least that destination, at least that worthy why that we've used in the past. And so, yeah, I don't think you can have leadership without direction. And you can't have direction unless you have indeed decided what the purpose or the why is. And so if you're disoriented, that should be the very first thing as you, as a captain, should say, okay, stop, before I try to lead, before I try to rally people, before I try to align them, I must orient. So must get organized, must pick up the worthy why.
Unbridled.
Unbridled. Yeah, that one's been a tough one. You've mentioned that word a couple of times to me. And quickly, when you say that, maybe it's the word unbridled, but I think bridle, I think horse, I think, you know, providing that direction, that influence to get it to go left or right if you're riding a horse. And unbridled, which means you have no way to control it. It's all over the place. You're kind of along for the ride. And so unbridled to me kind of ties in a little bit towards direction. Because first of all, if you're disoriented, got to get oriented, and then unbridled starts coming into the second of our or, which is alignment, right? Which is, all right, how do we get enough control, enough direction from an alignment perspective that now we can make a step towards the direction? And so unbridled to me just says, you can't be helter-skelter. You've got to bring things at least within a controllable, maybe influenceable environment well enough to get to where you're going.
Now, one way I look at it is when I find a leader that talks about, I want to be in charge, I can do what I want. And as soon as that comes out, then they have not bridled themselves, which is discipline themselves around, one, their values, but also the reality of the business, their crew, the situation, what's going on. And so unbridled kind of goes with the next one. Unbridled, I kind of view as self-discipline. What do you constrain yourself with? What is that, you know, kind of harnessing yourself into? Mm-hmm. Then untethered. And so untethered is slightly different to me, because are you actually tied to something? Being a crew, being towards something outside of yourself is the way I view untethered, at least from this leadership standpoint. But, you know, sometimes it's easier for me to look at a leader and go, are they unbridled? Are they untethered? Like, tell me what you're actually doing. What's the purpose of being here? What are you?
I'm just going off the words, and obviously words trigger, at least in my mind, pictures. Mm-hmm. I mentioned unbridled, picture a horse, right? Bridle, that sort of thing. And it's more of a left or right to get to the ultimate destination, the trail or wherever I'm going, top of the mountain. When you say untethered, I think of a balloon, right? And I think of just kind of drifting away. It's untethered, right? Anything, the wind pushes whatever it wants to go. And in reality, you're along for the ride. In that particular sense, at least with a horse, you're trying to get it under control. We're untethered. You have no purpose. You have no direction. You have no conviction. You're just going wherever the wind takes you, wherever society takes you, wherever the latest fad takes you. To me, that's untethered, because you've got really no direction, and that's different than being unbridled, in my opinion. So the discipline is one thing, right? Trying to hone yourself in towards this direction, this North Star. But untethered, I think, is worse than being unbridled. That untethered just sees that you're out there.
Yep.
I don't know how you become tethered once you become untethered.
I don't know. I feel like I've met some people that are untethered, but that's a longer discussion.
Well, how often have you associated with them when you
do
find
out? No, they're a little too drifting for me, to your point.
Drifting, yes.
Coherent versus incoherent. So coherent, I'll give you the definition on these two. So everything within you striving towards a harmonious unity versus incoherent when you're pursuing multiplicity.
Yes. Yeah, we use the word harmony quite a bit at our cohorts. And I like actually what you're talking about here. And what was the word again? It wasn't...
harmonious unity and then pursuing a multiplicity.
No, the first word though.
Oh, coherent. And
coherent, yes. So I like that, because a lot of people like to be multitasking, right? Mm-hmm. Doing a lot of things. And they think that's a trait or a sense of pride, right? They're proud that they can do many things. But they might have to question, well, are you doing any of them well? And so, you know, being coherent, being focused is kind of the word that comes to mind when I think about that, to me is much preferred. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't see and are aware of things to the left and to the right. But if you indeed are not unbridled, you're not untethered, you have that direction, that North Star, then you should be coherent in where you're headed towards. And you need to get that focused effort into that. So the second piece of that, I'm sorry?
Incoherent. So incoherent, we have harmonious unity. So to your point, it doesn't have to be one item, but there should be harmony and connection between the items.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Incoherent, I think, is the definition that is, I think, is interesting, is pursuing a multiplicity. So as opposed to harmonious unity, we're going to go every direction. And I see this often, and I've made this mistake often, if I tell someone, hey, I just want this, and you give them no options. So you haven't actually narrowed their field of view, so they have so many options, certainly if you understand sales and psychology. If you give your kids the same thing, give them too many options, you give them multiplicity, they lock up just the same as if they were afraid. It's too much. And so incoherent is shooting everything without it being brought together in harmony, and the odds of it actually being useful. It's almost frantic, maybe.
Frantic. Well, the thing,
or frozen.
A new image came into my head as you were describing it in more detail, the difference between noise and music.
No, right? I like that.
If you can get people in harmony, you can start bringing things together, then this noise now becomes almost pleasant, alluring. It attracts you. It draws you in. It comes with focus. And quite frankly, it's more pleasant to listen to mm-hmm. versus just noise. Everyone's talking their own thing. There's all stuff going on, and it becomes disruptive. And in fact, if it's too much noise, you just tune it out, where music draws you in. And so to be coherent says we're drawing people into our vision, into our purpose, into our destination, where if we're incoherent, we're just actually, people are just tuning us out, and we have no synergy, we have no harmony, we have no ability to use the talents because everyone's doing their own thing.
Disorderly versus orderly.
Ooh. I don't know if I've ever become disorderly. here's the thing. I'm big, as we know through our podcast. I'm an engineer by degree. I tend to see things very black and white. If we look at the DISC certification, I'm a C, which is compliant. I always like process. We've talked about that. So I tend to be orderly. But I also believe that you have to be aware that there are other things that could assist in your path. In other words, you can't be so blind. You can't put on the blinders. You can't say, well, it doesn't fit into the equation. It doesn't fit into the project plan. It doesn't fit into the equation. Because in reality, you're not growing. You're constraining yourselves there. So you've got to be aware. And you also have to be flexible and nimble enough, adaptive enough, to pivot a little bit. We've seen it through COVID and other things. If you are so rigid in what you're doing, you are too orderly, and you can't handle any disorder, to me, that's a recipe for disaster. That's saying that, hey, I'm going to take off on my aircraft mission, and it's all going to go perfectly. And if the enemy pops up and shoots at me, then I can't do that. I shouldn't do anything because it's not on my plan. No, you've got to adjust to the disorderly things that appear along the path.
Yeah, and I think order, again, is another one that depends on how, how tight you try to put it.
Yeah.
I think if you view order as there is an order of events versus the steps that must be done, that's a different thing. And so that if you're training for a marathon or some type of event, mm-hmm. there is an order that is prudent in order to get prepared for that event. That does not tell you the exact steps, to your point, of
correct.
How to actually do the process. And so, but disorderly, you hear a lot of people who run down the list of being a leader. They have lots of great ideas. Usually they're armchair quarterbacks in a peanut gallery. Mm. And when you start pressing into it, I will lay out how you would accomplish this thing that you think that someone else should be doing or failed to do. When you start pressing down onto, hey, well, give me some order and some depth and some thought of how this is going to occur. And then to your point, what happens when that didn't work? And
right.
And so I think orderly and disorderly, I see a lot of people that you see the breakdown there between the ones that are acting like leaders and the ones that are leaders, to be frank, because leaders will find a way to reorder, to your point, when necessary, as opposed to folks that kind of crumble under the pressure.
Sure. Actually, it reminded me something of, I think it was the last podcast, we talked about the dichotomy of leadership by Jocko Willink. And as you were saying those words, this is again why I love this podcast. None of this is scripted. This is fantastic because we get to share our leadership vision and experiences. But I was thinking that with some of those words, I'd much rather be on one side versus the other. You know, bridled versus unbridled. Mm-hmm. You know, organized versus unorganized. But in reality, it's a dichotomy.
Wow.
We can't have an absolute on either side. There are going to be things that we need to be aware of, we need to adapt to, we need to be cognizant of, and we need to incorporate in order to be an effective leader. And so I think all of these come out on a dichotomy. I think I'd much rather be on one side versus the other 99.9% of the time, but there is that 0.1% where, all right, I can be disorganized for today or maybe for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you get the full spectrum to your point on the next one I had, which is deranged. So no one deranged. Wants a deranged leader, but the interesting thing is to make someone go insane by putting things out of proper order and alignment. So it's almost deranged. Think of arranging things. Versus to your point, you can go OCD, which is another problem, which is so much order that you're trying to control the world.
True.
Both are ends of the spectrum, but deranged, I think, is interesting. Just wrote it down because, you know, people get kind of manic and frantic a lot of times. You see this start happening.
Yeah. And
hopefully you see it in yourself when you get too much stress or things are moving too fast, but also in the other leaders within the organization of, you know what, they're starting to get a little bit out of order and things are getting spiraling out of control.
Deranged, not a word I think of often, not a word I use very often. I hear it quite a bit, especially in mainstream media, but it's not one but it comes to me with a negative connotation.
Deranged,
and it just seems unbridled and untethered, everything all kind of gone into one.
Yeah, I throw it out because it's interesting. Actually, the definition again is making it out of proper order or arrangement. And so it's out of sequence.
It's
not actually, like everybody thinks they've gone insane.
Just going to say that because that's
somewhat insane, but it's to make you go insane because things are so far out of order and out of arrangement. And so when you hear that term used, and you think of a leadership characteristic of, to your point, preparing to be a leader. Do you have your bearing? Are you prepared? Do you have your tact? All these things we're talking about is, are you getting yourself in some type of arrangement and preparation to be the leader?
Yes. And again, not even taking the negative connotation, as I mentioned, right? So I heard it and I thought of it in a very crazy sort of way. But if you actually look at the word deranged, right? It's unarranged, right? So out of the proper order, as you just mentioned that definition, which then says, all right, if you get yourself into a deranged situation, your job as the leader is to, through a very hopefully systematic, very deliberate, very directionally oriented manner, put things back in order, try to get them back in order, make it less deranged, more towards orderly, which will get you more towards bridled versus unbridled, which will get you more towards tethered versus untethered. And so to me, it's maybe a description of the environment, which then with you as a leader would take actions to start to diminish the impact and effect of that situation or circumstance.
Right. Out of order is bad. Too many options we talked about. Multiplicity
yes.
is bad.
Yes.
You know, they talk about the leadership, everyone wants to be at the top, and you think that you're actually leading. I think what's interesting, I had a discussion with leaders, is how often you are not actually leading towards what the business is trying to accomplish. You're actually leading a change, you're leading a culture, you're leading an initiative, and that seems confusing. But if your business is to, you know, have a service company you want to take from regional to national, your job as a leader is not to provide service nationally. Your job is to create an organization that is capable of running on a national scale, which is seems like a difference that's not that big of a deal. But you must have leaders that continue to provide the services at the level that you've been providing. You must figure out how now to order, orient, build a culture that is capable of growing that white cap that Scott and I have talked about. You also have to go ahead of your organization start thinking about where that organization should be on a national scale. So are you going ahead and making introductions to, maybe it's a national association? Are you going ahead and making introductions in another state? Are you building out the processes and systems? You're working on the actual company as an entity that has somewhat to do with the service, but not as much to do with actually providing the services of the company that you're running or the products that you're running. It's, can I successfully navigate the next waypoint with my organization and my people? That's a little different than, you own a restaurant, you cook, you create great recipes. You own a bunch of restaurants, you don't cook and you don't make great recipes anymore.
Yeah,
you
true.
Run the restaurants, you're in the restaurant business.
Right.
You're not in the cooking business anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting that at the convention I keep on mentioning, by the way, it was the International Maxwell Convention, IMC, down in Orlando. And there were several speakers and several sessions that talked about the importance of understanding the direction and how success can suddenly taint what your at least initial purpose was. And suddenly you came up with a product or service, it did well, And then suddenly a client comes in and asks for a slight tweak to that, and you being wanting to be more successful and kind of feeling that dopamine hit, mm-hmm. you know, you suddenly start moving your organization towards the needs of this one company. And the question is, if that's still aligned to where you're going, then that's fine. But if suddenly, you know, you after a year or many years, you find yourself way over here in some new land that you never intended to be, and you're frustrated, your employees are frustrated, you know, you're still having difficulty getting the quality you want or the opinion of the customer and customer satisfaction, you have to ask yourself, well, how did I get over here? Well, you got over there because you weren't focused. You allowed yourself to get distracted, and you really got away from your core purpose, your core mission. And so as leaders, we've got to be aware of the intoxicating effects of success and how that can actually draw you away from your true purpose. There were other speakers at the convention who talked a lot about, you know, having that singularity of purpose and how they would actually, even though many were coming to them wanting products or services, they had to say no. And as a leader, that was more important to them and their organization, was to not get distracted, and to stay on course towards their ultimate why and their worthy destination. And so we've got to be aware of that as leaders, the intoxicating effect of success.
Well, we speak a lot about wisdom. And so to me, we've broken leadership down from sort of the putting on the role
the
of
facade,
being a leader,
yep.
the facade of being a leader, to mm-hmm. being one that is taking personal self-assessment and pride and alignment and the time to develop tact and humility and sacrifice and stewardship and things we talk about, and thinking about legacy and a long-term impact on the employees and the business. And then, you know, to me, another level of that wisdom is a word called sagacity, which is an old word. The Greeks like.
If I didn't use deranged very often, sagacity is not one.
I will read it because it's interesting. It's an old word used a lot by the ancient Greeks, but it's developed by applying thoughtful analysis, wisdom, and keen judgment to navigate complex situations. It involves using our experiences and discernment to make sound decisions, provide insightful advice, and approach challenges with a thoughtful and wise perspective.
Mm.
Developing sagacity requires a deep understanding of the situation at hand and ability to offer considered solutions based on accumulated knowledge.
I think that's like the ultimate destination there.
I don't think it's one many people met. And so, again, the ancient Greeks liked it a lot. Socrates and those type people used that term. But the idea is, how well considered are you? How much have you thought? How much knowledge? The situation? Are you taking all the potential, data points mm-hmm. and knowledge and experience? To me, this is where you use proper use of diversity in your group, your leadership team. Are you taking the other facets and other people's opinions into account? And then the reality is, how many of those decisions can you actually make a day or a week? And I think that's a tough reality for where we started. If we want to not judge a book by the cover, we want to take the time to get to know everyone, we want to consider mm-hmm. you know, all the things. How often do you actually have time as a leader to get that in depth with yourself, with the situation, with the employees, with a person you're just meeting that may do business or transaction with? Mm. The reality is, not that often. And so how do you weigh that out and prioritize it and make sure, to your point, you keep going towards your goal, living out your purpose the way yep. that you feel is honorable and virtuous? And it's tough. I mean, this is the part where it gets hard to be the leader.
Well, it is tough. It goes back to some of the words that you mentioned, you know, orderly. It goes back to some of the things we've talked about, discipline. You know, there's John Maxwell's big in saying that, you know, success is determined by your daily agenda. And he would say, because of the importance of everything you just talked about, the wisdom, the self-awareness, the reflection, that you have to have time to do those. And the only way you get time by doing those is actually make them part of your daily habits. And so whether that is first thing in the morning when you wake up, you kind of get yourself centered about going into work, and these are things we're going to work on, or I'm going to make an incremental improvement towards this particular strategic objective. You've got to do that, and you've got to have some order to it. It doesn't mean that you know, your kids suddenly come in and they're not feeling well, and guess what? You've got to take care of your family. So you got to go and have the dichotomy to shift a little bit, but your daily habits are what going to determine your success. And I think in this case of self-reflection, of knowledge, right? As leaders, you're constantly learning. You've got to have a learner mindset as a leader. You're never going to arrive as a leader. You're always going to continue to be growing. There are going to be new circumstances, new things, new technologies, new ways of doing things. AI, for example, coming in, right? You can resist it all day long, but guess what? It's part of the reality. How are you going to incorporate into your business? And you as a leader have to figure out, well, how do I incorporate AI in my business? And maybe you don't become, so deep that you become an AI, geek, but at the same time, you've got to know enough about it to know how it's going to affect your business. And so that I see that as daily, right? So I know you're listening to the podcast. You and I talked just yesterday after not seeing each other for a week that, hey, I lost listening to this podcast. I was reading this book. I finished this. Here are my notes on that. That's part of our learning. That's part of our knowledge. That's part of our sharing. And I think if you can get yourself around an inner circle of people who are helping one another, so it's not you on the island and you're sharing thoughts and wisdom, I think that's the environment which you as a leader continue to develop. And so for me, it's about doing those things daily. Every day I'm reading something. Every day I'm writing notes on something. Every day I'm trying to figure out how can I make what I did yesterday better today. Our old adage, our best is good for today. Tomorrow we'll do better. And that's kind of the environment you got to be in as a leader, right? Because as you said, hey, I want to become the leader so I get to decide what I want to do. And well, guess what? As soon as you get that, if that's your mindset, then you start to die. You're not growing. If you're not growing, you're dying. There's only two ways to go. And so as a leader, I think you should continue to grow.
Yeah, I mean, it's to me, the biggest thing is, do you enjoy the journey and the adventure, or are you looking for the destination?
Mm.
If you're looking for the destination,
seek pleasure,
it's not,
avoid pain,
it's not for us. And so the reality is it changes so often. If you don't enjoy trying to learn and figure it out and lead people, lead relationships, lead your family, whatever that is, and you just want to get to the easy part and get to the destination, you will never reach a level of sagacity or knowledge or continuing to learn a growth mindset that Scott's speaking about.
Mm-hmm. So. Yes. So I think we're going to wrap it up there. We've been talking for a little bit of time. For those who don't know what all 14 Marine Corps leadership traits are, I'm going to recite them right now. Chandler's going to keep me honest. I'm not going to look at my notes, right? So remember, buckle, did, tie, JJ. It's 14 letters. The B is bearing. The U is unselfishness. The C is courage. The K is knowledge. The L is loyalty. The E is enthusiasm, because there's two of them, or endurance. Then you've got, so you got the D. The D is decisiveness. The I is initiative. The other D is dependability. Then you got tie, T-I-E. The T is tact. The I is integrity. The E is either endurance or enthusiasm, depending on which E you want to use first. And then you got JJ, justice and judgment. How'd I do?
100.
All right, fantastic. My DI from back in 1984 would be very proud of me at this particular point. But I want to thank you all for joining us on the Powerhouse Perspective. And I hope you got a feel for how my relationship with Chandler, our relationship with each other works, right? We're constantly just feeding off one another. This session today, like all of our sessions, we didn't prepare for it. We came in with an outline, a couple of words, a couple of things on a piece of paper, and then we kind of use our experiences to try to help one another grow and help you grow as our listeners. So hopefully, I hope you enjoyed being at table with us today, and we'll see you next time on the Powerhouse Perspective.
Take care.
Cheers.